Hello and welcome. We're now going to discuss tonight's case. And it's an important case because it's where the appellate division of the New York State laid out the issue of pressure and deception and duress and what we just discussed about in our lecture. Because in order to have genuine assent on a contract, you cannot have the parties not understand what the contract is. That's why we require capacity. We can't have a party be a minor so that they don't have enough age and experience to understand the fact you're contracting. We can't have the party be mentally ill. We can't have them be mentally incompetent because of the fact that they have a brain disease or they have a problem with a brain injury. We can't have them be intoxicated. They have to have capacity so they can understand what the contract is and what the contract does. And we also have to make sure that there's no mistake in the contract, that the contract is what the people think that it is. Both parties have that. That's why unilateral mistakes sometimes allow the contract to go forward, because when one party doesn't understand it, the other party does at that, and the other party didn't know that the other party was mistaken in something, they let that go forward. But when both parties have a mistake, whether it be a fact in the contract or something like a printing or a transcription error, that allows the contract to be rescinded. But one area that the law hates the most is where one party deceives, either through fraud or misrepresentation, either intentional or negligent, or simply by providing contract which is not what it purports to be, then that contract shouldn't be allowed to go forward. And the law hates fraud. The law hates misrepresentation, where you're required to disclose something in a contract and then you actively conceal it. And, you know, those things are not favored in the law. But the area which is the least favored is when you try to force, coerce the other party into the contract. That means that you use a threat to get them to go into the contract. And that's what tonight's case is, because obviously, how can you have genuine assent? How can you have an actual agreement of the parties where one of the parties feels they have to enter into the contract because there's a threat on behalf of the other party coming at you and saying either you sign this contract or something really bad is going to happen to you? And that's not a agreement. It's not a free will. So the law does not look favorably on that. And that does have parameters. You can't have a party just say, hey, I felt threatened, and that ruins contract, because otherwise everybody would say, hey, I felt threatened. So that's what this tonight's case is about. What are those parameters for duress? This case involved an office complex, and it was a real estate arm's length transaction, and it started in 1966, which was a long time ago. It was 4 years after I was born, and you have a period of time which it went on for 23 years and 6 months. And it was located in Melville, Long Island, which is out in Suffolk County. Matter of fact, I can go still see where the building is today that is out there. And it involved a person by the name of David Gerstein and a defendant, which was a corporation which held the office complex. And that corporation obviously had a number of individuals who represented it. And the two parties here, one Gerstein and one this corporation, were trying to enter into a contract with respect to what happened after the lease expired on this real estate premise. And they went on and on this negotiation. This was in the late 1970s when the real estate, particularly in Suffolk County, was growing and very active. And the market was very growing and very active. And the two parties were negotiating very strongly after this 23-year lease, which was entered into in the early 60s, when Suffolk County at the time was mostly potato farms. It was not a very heavily commercial area. And this was one of the first areas in Suffolk County to be really commercialized. And Melville was an area where you had a growing commercial presence. And but by the time that this real estate contract went over in the late 70s, it was 1979, you had a situation where obviously the market had changed. It was a lot more expensive, and the parties were aggressively negotiating what happens with this office building and whether or not they're going to lease it and what they're going to do with it. So throughout the course of this negotiation, the Broad Hollow Inc., which was this real estate holding firm which held the property, was negotiating with Gerstein. And it eventually came down to where they got a contract, but Gerstein sued over it. And he said, that's not the contract that I wanted. It was duress. They made me sign a contract, which was a bad deal. So the court took up the question and determined whether the contract that was signed between the parties was actually impaired and hence voidable due to duress. And did Gerstein force this Broad Hollow into this duress? Well, in deciding this case, the court defined what duress is. The court stated that generally speaking, duress exists where one party is compelled to perform an act which he or she has the legal right to abstain from performing. They're required to agree when they don't have to. The compulsion must be such as to overcome that exercise of free will. So hence you don't have an agreement because there's no free will. It overcomes that genuine assent. It must involve an act or a threat of action where the person sought to be influenced is entitled to be free but can't be because of the threat. Where such exists, the court said, the threatened party enters into the contract or agrees to a contractual provision in order to avoid that perceived danger. Now, in this contract, there was no allegation that one party turned around and threatened the other one by physical force. It wasn't an issue of physical duress. Nobody came to each other's house and said, either sign this contract or we're going to shoot you or we're going to kill your wife or anything like that. The allegations here were economic distress. And the court talks about that. The court says that the danger with respect to the duress may be physical harm to the person or their property, called physical duress, or it may be financial loss for such person called economic duress. And although economic duress is called by the defendant in their affirmative defense, and that's what was raised here, against Mr. Gerstein's claim of damages, the court didn't find any duress. And we'll tell you why. Because a threat to do something which that person has the right to do anyway does not constitute duress, particularly not economic duress. So here, the parties had the right to do what they were threatening to do. Here, in this case, Gerstein was granted by agreement the right of first refusal when the company entered into the contract to sell without offering the premises to him. He was given that right of first refusal. Well, he went out and claimed that that was duress. And when the company breached its agreement to him, Gerstein did not have to do more than assert the rights confirmed to him in his agreements. He had the right to do that. All he was doing was asserting his rights. Gerstein, they claimed, was acting with duress, that he was holding this corporation over a barrel. And that's why they claimed it was duress, because he had these rights in this 1969 and 72 lease agreements to get this right of first refusal. And that's not duress, the court said, because he had a legal right to do it. And if he was doing something which he didn't have a legal right to do, then that would be duress. But defendant in this case recognized in its letter of April 6th, the court said, when it assured him that share of sale proceeds, that it would be calculated based on the total price. And in reliance of this promise, Gerstein, who sued, waived his right under the agreement, and the trial court properly dismissed this affirmative defense of duress. So what does this come on to? Duress is very clear. When a party turns around and threatens another party, it's extraordinarily clear when it is physical duress. If someone comes to your house with a gun and says, sign the contract, that's really clear. If somebody turns around and says, I'm going to shoot your wife unless you do that, I'm going to kill your child, I'm going to break your child's legs, that is clearly duress. In the economic terms, that becomes more difficult. If you turn around and threaten to ruin that person, that is generally viewed as economic distress. But if you threaten to ruin them by a means by which you have the legal right to do so, say, you know, you haven't paid your car payment in 5 months. I have the right to repossess the car and I'm going to do it. Well, guess what? That's not duress. Why? Because they have the right to do that. So when you have the legal right to do something and you make that as part of the negotiation, it's not very nice, but it's not duress because you have the legal right to do that. So it's when you don't have the legal right to do something. If you say, I'm going to repossess your car when all of the car payments have been made and you're up to date on that, then that would be economic distress. And it would be economic duress to the point whereby you would say, you don't have the legal right to do that, and you're threatening to ruin me and cause harm to my reputation. And as a result of that, that's duress to sign the contract. That's where we are. I'm going to look for you next week. Thanks so much.